The following podcast has been recorded under the influence of alcohol. While not intentionally offensive, things are said, feelings may be hurt, and f***s are not given. Clearly, it's the beer's fault.
The Good Beer Bad Movie Night Podcast.
Welcome to episode 38 of Good Beer, Bad Movie Night, the podcast dedicated to movies of questionable quality and the frosty adult beverages that help make them tolerable. Tonight, our fans have selected the feature presentation from 2010, Country Strong, not Country Song, Country Strong, and yes, our fans hate us. The synopsis will be done by the person that selected said film for voting, our dear Kathleen. She will start off with a six-minute synopsis, yep, where she is going to take 6 minutes to summarize the movie, and I hope she fails so we can get a super fun song from her. I'm trying.
I can sing some more Friends in Low Places for
you. We're going to take a quick break after the synopsis. We're going to come back with a beer. Kathleen picked out two beers for us, or Troy did, but it doesn't matter. But we have two beers to talk about tonight amongst our review of said film. We will wrap up the evening with our six-pack rating as we let you know just how drunk you have to be to enjoy this film.
Yes.
With that said, folks, hi, how you doing, guys? We're having a good time, right, I think? Kathleen, good evening. The movie selector, I suppose.
Yes. Well, you set us the task of creating a poll where the movie had to be something that was streaming on Netflix. And I spent about an hour surfing through Netflix, ruining my Netflix recommendations, hunting for something that would be a bad movie. And I had narrowed it down to two choices. This one, Country Strong, and the live action Gem and the Holograms. And
I would have gone for Gem and the Holograms.
Well, I might have had to go with door number two there, Kathleen.
Well, you know, here's the thing. I texted a couple of people and asked for suggest, you know, what they thought, and several were very much for Country Strong. One person was a super Gem fan. I went with Country Strong because I think they're both equally stupid. And
there are really super Gem fans out there.
Well, you know, some of us used to be 8-year-old girls when that cartoon was on. So, but in my original posting and saying that this was the movie that I picked, you gentlemen were grateful that I did not pick Gem in the Holograms. So
I don't remember that.
And now we're like Showtime synergy.
Troy also used to be an 8-year-old girl when that cartoon was on.
I was. So we were hoisted by our own petard in this one.
Yes. But, you know.
Our petard hoists the shit out of us quite often.
As far as petards go, we were duly hoisted.
Yeah.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the voice of our buddy Dave.
Hello, everyone.
So, and finally, but not lastly, wait, lastly, but not...
Anyway. Wait, what are you saying?
We have Troy.
Hey!
You're not lastly in my thoughts or heart or whatever.
Thanks, man, I think. Anyway,
that joke went nowhere.
Have you been drinking, Pete?
Yeah.
I'm on 1.5 right now, yes.
Okay, just making sure.
Otherwise,
we've got two more to go.
We have a bigger problem.
Right.
Oh.
So again, we have this movie is our listeners' fault, and we actually have multiple listeners now, which is really cool. Mm-hmm. And I'm also regretting it because of the result of this poll.
Because apparently they're revolting.
Yeah, they wanted to see us suffer, or at least, yeah. At the very least, me.
This felt like malice. This didn't feel like we want to watch this. This felt like we were at the end of the strings and they're making us dance. A little bit. Here we are.
There was at least right. one of our right. Voters did tell me that she wanted to hear us tear apart Gwen Paltrow because she hates Gwen Paltrow. Like, I hate Gwen Paltrow, so that was one of the reasons she voted for this movie, is that she couldn't wait to hear us talk about how much we hate Goopface.
Oh.
Well, anyway.
I was almost tempted to purchase one of her candles. Are you all aware of her candles?
I am aware of the fact that she has a, and I say this with the most ugh in my voice, lifestyle website called Goop, and that yes. she is the reason for a variety of insane things that women think they need to do to their bodies. I'm sorry, but no.
I don't think you're very creative, Kathleen.
Where's your sense of adventure?
You know, what you do on your Saturday night is your business. That's why we record on Fridays.
Or a Monday morning situation. Okay, I'm thirsty. I want a beer.
Oh, Lord. Let's get into this synopsis.
Okay.
So, Kathleen, you've got 6 minutes to synopsize this.
Yes.
This shitty movie.
All right. I'm ready.
Ready?
Yep.
On your mark. Get set. Summarize.
Country Strong, a movie that wanted to be A Star Is Born but didn't want to be accused of being a ripoff, so they added unnecessary characters, thus diluting the plotline and making us give not a single shit about anyone in the movie. I also want to mention that Gwyneth Paltrow is just the worst. At a bar, dude sings. Dude works in a rehab facility. Dude is named Bo. Bo is friends with patient Kelly. Kelly is played by the completely out of touch with reality queen of jade eggs goop matron herself, Gwen Paltrow. I hate her. James, played by Tim McGraw, shows up and is husband manager of Kelly. Kelly gets out of rehab early. Bad idea. She's a drunk, not recovered, and is there due to some incident in Dallas last year. She also had a baby bird she's holding prisoner in a box. Why? Don't care. Gwen still sucks. James wants Kelly to go on tour. Kelly wants Bo to go too. James has other ideas. Bo sings at a different bar. We meet Chiles Stanton, girl James wants to tour with Kelly. Bo and Chiles know each other. Chiles has stage fright. Bo helps her by singing Friends in Low Places. James sees both performances, offers tour to Chiles, convinces Bo to go to help support Kelly. Bad idea. Gwen still sucks. James and Kelly's marriage is falling apart as fast as her career. Ambien versus the Brazilian bikini wax. Ambien wins. Ouch. Gwen still sucks. Tour stop one, Houston. We get confirmation that Bo and Kelly are having an affair. We learn Kelly is suspicious and jealous of James and Chiles having a potential relationship. As the viewer, we're never really sure of this either and kind of don't care, especially because Gwen still sucks. We learn Kelly went to rehab after a drunken incident in Dallas when she was 5 months pregnant. Kelly is taking pills to boost her nerve and face going on stage. Kelly gets an awful, air quotes, gift, calling her out for being a baby killer. This topples her very weakened resolve to perform. Bo sings, Chiles sings. Kelly gets drunk, fights with James, makes it on stage. Kelly doesn't sing. James yells at Bo. Bo doesn't care. Gwen still sucks. Tour moves to Austin. Press conference claims Kelly has food poisoning in Houston. In interview, Chiles says she idolizes Kelly and Jesus Christ, and Gwen still sucks. Bo and Kelly decide to ride the rails and shout out the side of a boxcar for a few hours. This helps how? James takes Chiles to the recording studio. The record label man wants her to sing a song that Kelly is wanting to be her new single. Bo and Kelly shower and hook up, or hook up in a shower. I don't know. I don't care. Bo and Kelly fight because Bo says some shit about love and fame not being able to occupy the same space. Kelly walks out back to her own room in her towel where James is feeding the bird prisoner. What? Gwen still sucks. Bo and Chiles hang out. They drink the mini bar, watch Miss America, and get silly. They almost hook up, but nope. James comes to talk to Chiles about her growing popularity and cock blocks Bo. Bo leaves. Gwen still sucks. Bo is mean to Chiles the next day because he assumes that she is hooking up with James. Hypocrite. Bo goes to the bar. Kelly finds him at the bar and takes him to a recording studio where she sees Chiles singing her song. Kelly melts down. James makes her feel better by letting her take care of the box bird. Why is this still a thing? Did I mention Gwen still sucks? Kelly goes completely off the rails, goes to a biker bar, is drunk off her ass. Beau finds her, calls Childs to help him get Kelly to the venue. Childs tries to bond with Kelly in the backseat of the car, telling her some story about earrings. Kelly gives no shits because Gwen sucks. At the venue, Kelly is barfing. Beau sings, Childs sings, Kelly does not. Promoter JJ is pissed and wants to cancel the Dallas show. Kelly prostitutes herself to JJ to get the Dallas show back on. Beau walks in on this, throws JJ off the tour bus, and yells at Kelly and smashes her bottle of vodka. Childs and Beau now start hooking up. The next morning, James is pissed. Kelly left the bird at the biker bar, and he's leaving to go and get it. Kelly tells him JJ has allowed for the Dallas show. Wonder why. And Gwen still sucks. Kelly and James go to a school to participate in a Make-A-Wish event for a sick little boy. Bad idea. That turns out okay. Kelly sings, makes up a song for the kid, gets everyone up and dancing. Seems normal and okay. Kelly and James dance, and the intimacy of the moment is too much. James walks away and cries in the hallway over the shit show that is his life, marriage, and career. By the way, Gwen still sucks. Final stop, Dallas. We learn the full extent of the Dallas incident. That 1 year ago, 5 months pregnant, Kelly was so wasted on stage, she tripped over a mic cord, fell 10 feet off the stage, killing her unborn child. She is arrested and charged with drunken disorderly and packed off to rehab. We now understand why James is so messed up over things with Kelly. Maybe he's not the villain in this movie after all. Beau gives Childs star earrings inspired by her story from the cab. Beau tells her after the show he's going to California to work a ranch, write songs, and sing in bars for people who want to hear good music. He wants Childs to come with him. She's hesitant, and he knows she won't come. Beau sings, dedicating a song to Kelly, played by Gwen Paltrow, who sucks. Kelly
1 minute.
Gives Childs showbiz advice that includes not using laxatives and having to tell the world her parents are violent jailbirds. Where the hell does that nugget of information come from? Childs sings. James and Kelly are backstage. James says he never loved anything like he loved her. Kelly sings and sings and sings. Why do we have to see 3 songs, costume changes, and a concert performance that is just Gwen strutting up and down a runway like a sugared up 6-year-old at a gross child beauty pageant? Again, I remind you that Gwyneth Paltrow still sucks. As her closing song, Kelly sings Coming Home, Childs' song, but now it will forever be a Kelly Cantor song. She makes a snarky remark to Childs and walks off stage. Kelly accepts the praise from folks backstage and heads to her dressing room. Kelly is gone for too long. James notices. Beau notices. Beau kicks down the dressing room door to find Kelly unconscious from an overdose. Kelly is rushed to the hospital. Kelly dies. James is destroyed. Beau is pounding outside the hospital. Beau stalks the funeral from afar, makes eye contact with Childs, and leaves. Beau goes to California. He reads a letter from Kelly that basically says that he needs to get out of the fame game because fame and love cannot exist together, and he deserves love. Time passes. Who knows how long? Beau's singing in a bar. Childs shows up wearing his earrings. Gwen Paltrow is the ruler of Suckington in the land of Sucksville on the planet of Suckitude where this movie was made. The end.
Six minutes, 19 seconds.
Ooh.
Well,
within tolerances.
That is barely... You have succeeded, unfortunately.
Yes. I cut some things out and then ran it again.
I'm guessing you probably didn't cut any of the Gwyneth Paltrow sucks comments.
No, I didn't. I cut other things so that I could keep all the Gwen Paltrow sucks.
She added a couple, I think, from the initial.
But now I'm really thirsty from talking that much that fast, so I need a beer.
Me too.
Well done. Okay. A successful 6-minute synopsis. Thank you, Kathleen. Let's all get a beer.
Yay!
Yes.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Well, now I have to pee.
You had your chance.
All right. We are drinking Wolf's Ridge Heartlandia. Wolf's Ridge is a
Heartlandia.
Fine, fine Columbus institution. I'm a big fan of both their beers and their restaurant, which I very much look forward to going to again someday.
You said both their beers. It's like they have more than one beer choice. Oh, both their beers and their restaurant.
And their restaurant,
sorry.
That's right.
Context,
their beers are great.
Context.
Both of them.
More than one. Right.
This is their easy drinking beer. This is just an American lager, 4.2 ABV, yep. 10 IBU. It's simple little, just a light taste of hops to it, a little sweet, not a lot to it. Honestly, though, this has been kind of what I've been in the mood for recently.
Just an easy drinker?
Sure.
Yeah. I think it's because I am drinking quite a bit. It's one of those, like...
It's smart to dumb down your alcohol intake to a 4% beer instead of 8% beer, right?
Yeah, I'm doing, like, the Worcester Ridge Heartlandia. I'll do the Platform Basic Lager, the Lost Lager from Brewdog, mm-hmm. That Cover Crop Ale that we did in the last episode from North High.
Yeah.
All nice, easy drinking beers, and you just can kind of continuously drink throughout the day.
This is good.
It is good. Mm-hmm. It's got a little sweetness to it, but it does have flavor still.
As a lager does.
Yeah, it's thicker. It's more viscous than I was expecting. I like that.
It's apparently all Ohio.
Some of your true lagers are much like this. Your not your light lagers, but even if you go up to like a Sam Adams Boston,
mm-hmm.
The Boston Lager is similar to this, where it has a body to it. The Miller Lights and Bud Lights of the world have really sullied the name of lager. Because they're
you've
actually
sullied the name of lager.
Beer. True, it's true. But this is a true lager. It is an excellent beer. It's easy drinking. It's simple. It is sweet, Troy. You're absolutely right.
But choose wisely, because as the true lager will give you life, the false lager will take it from you.
Absolutely.
This is well made. Lagers are really hard to make because they have such a small malt bill. There's not a lot of malt in them, and especially for a 4.2% beer, there's not a lot of leeway or mistakes that you can make in the beer.
Not a lot
whereas
of margin for
some of the bigger flavored beers, that's exactly what I meant to say. The margin of error is very thin. You have to hit it solidly on the nail to come up with a good product, and this is a very good product. Well done, Wolf's Ridge.
They're a quality institution, aren't the Wolf's Ridge? I'm quite a fan.
Yeah, I like
it. It's a beautiful place. They've got heck of a menu. It is a fine dining establishment, faux show.
Mm-hmm.
But luckily, they let dumbasses like me in the backside just to get to the brewery, because they don't let my kind in the front side with where they have the food and all.
Not with them pretty people.
We went for a fancy schmancy dinner down there at the restaurant, and it was quite tasty.
Yep.
Fancy schmancy, huh?
Oh yeah,
it was.
Yes,
like
we
cloth
had
napkins and like toilets with
we
seats
had
on them.
Truffle oil spun popcorn for dessert.
That sounds fragrant and delicious.
Very much was.
So they all serve your stuff on real plates and not like styrofoam containers and...
Right.
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 Not like the places where I go.
The silverware? Actual metal.
Oh, the silverware is actual metal?
Yeah.
It's gold like antique.
Not silver plastic.
It's been so long since I've gone to a restaurant that didn't serve my food in a trough.
Oh my.
Just slop in the bucket. Like, here you go. Eat this, you fat shit. Like, oh, thank you. Like, no talking.
There are better places to go in town.
Doesn't Donna
Dave
sing the praises of the fishmonger? Or what is that? The fish? What's that called?
Oh, the fish camp?
Fish camp?
Fish camp.
Yes, the fish camp. Yeah, that's apparently they're popular in the South. It is a singular experience. It is just pretty, unsophisticated, good, fill you up, feeding you fried food. I've been there a couple times with her and her family. I love it there. It is not the fanciest food in the world, but you will get fed. You will not leave hungry. You might feel some shooting pains going down the left side of your body, but... going back to my eating from a trough.
Oh, my.
Speaking of eating from troughs...
You want to talk about this movie?
This movie.
I'm going to have a hard time talking about this movie because... I have a problem making fun of the following: spousal abuse, losing a child, mental illness, drug abuse, alcohol abuse, and suicide. So
we're just making fun of alcohol abuse just a minute ago.
That's That's being a dumbass and spilling booze on you.
Accidentally drinking tobacco juice and smokeless tobacco. Oh, yeah, that too.
So I'm going to have a hard time finding something funny about this movie.
Yeah. I did not know. I knew nothing about this movie other than it was stupid. I did not know it was this dark at all. And it was like, I was maybe 10 minutes into the movie and I was like, damn it, this is A Star Is Born, and that movie is real dark. And then it was like, right. When it got to the end and she'd overdosed, I was like, shit, it really is A Star Is Born. Like, I was real pissed then. So, but...
I'm going to do something a little uncharacteristic. Oh, God. That wasn't it.
That's very characteristic. That's right in line.
More characteristic if we were to come out the other end. Like, what? But when I was watching this movie, first of all, I actually didn't have a problem with any of these performances. I thought the performances were actually pretty decent. Even the reviled Gwyneth Paltrow, which I don't have a particularly negative opinion of her work. Her as a person, I try to ignore because I get kind of annoyed. The movie was really melodramatic. Like, just, they laid it on real thick. And it got me to thinking, like, you know what? I feel like if this movie with same performances, maybe to some different actors, but if it were released like 30 years ago or 40 years ago, it might be better received because all this stuff is like, it's super, it's pretty cliche. But back then it may not have been, or maybe less so. It reminded me, and I realize this is a bit of a leap, of Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, in that it was released at the exact perfect time, which is the late 80s. Mm-hmm. If that movie had been released now, people would think it was incredibly stupid. It would never have been as successful as it is, and because it's too hokey. By today's standards, as far as movies or popular movies are, it's too campy and a little ridiculous. All these things made it awesome back in 89 or whenever it was released, but now it wouldn't do well. But I feel like if this movie was released a generation ago, it might have done better. But as it stands, it was released now, so it sucks.
I kind of get what you're saying. It a little bit has the schmaltz of like Coal Miner's Daughter with Sissy Spacek and what's his name? Tommy Lee Jones. Which is, you know, significantly older movie in comparison to this one, and covers some dark themes as well in the life of Loretta Lynn. It's a biopic about Loretta Lynn. And so I kind of get what you're saying. I agree with you that Gwyneth Paltrow is, as a human, is just ridiculous, but I have to disagree with you about her performances. I never once forget that I'm looking at Gwyneth Paltrow when she's on screen. Not once. She is the exact same in every movie. And one of my formerly favorite movies that I used to love when I was younger is Shakespeare in Love. But it was and that was one of the first movies I'd ever seen that she was in. And after I saw multiple other movies that she was in, I was like, my God, this is the same chick every time. I can't tell you how pissed I was at the first Iron Man when she was cast as Pepper Potts. And I have no dog in the fight of being a fan of Iron Man. I didn't even understand who the fuck Iron Man was when I went to see that movie. Like, I was totally not the comic book person that was like, oh, it's nothing like the Pepper Potts in the comics. No, I was just like, oh, her? Why? And every time she has showed up in any incantation of Pepper Potts takes me right out of it. I was so fucking pissed in Endgame when all the girl characters come rushing forward in the big fight, and there she is. Because I'm like, yes, yes, oh, fucking Gwen. It was just like, no. Literally took me out of it because I tell you, Blythe Danner should be ashamed of her because Blythe Danner is amazing. She's an incredible actress. And I was actually a little upset when I found out that Gwen was her daughter. I was like, oh, Blythe, you did us bad. She sucks.
So
Bruce Paltrow might have to take a little bit of credit for that, too.
Well, maybe. Maybe it's all his fault. I mean, auto-tune is an amazing tool. She did manage to carry a tune right. in the movie. I'm sure they did. I don't know how well she does or does not sing IRL.
She does actually sing pretty well. Even Donna was watching, like, while she was coming in and out, like, while I was watching it and with my head in my hands. And she was like, oh, you know what? She can actually sing. Although the final performance when she was singing, like, the big high energy.
Yeah. The show in Dallas.
Yes. That might have been a bit auto-tuned. I don't know. She definitely got a lot of help.
Yeah.
It also really drives home the fact how hard that must be to be on a stage and be a presence.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that. Although I will say that the costuming and the makeup that they did for that particular scene, that performance, like, she really did look like an analog for, say, a Faith Hill, which is interesting because Tim McGraw was in the movie and, you know, they're married.
That's his wife, right?
Yeah. If the movie sucked, and it did suck, let's be clear. I don't know if it was...
Don't beat around that bush.
Yeah.
Well, or don't steam that bush. Oh, sorry. That was bad.
Oh, that was good.
That's another goop reference there.
Although I have a feeling that she's more of a... well, never mind. I'm not going to talk about Gwyneth Paltrow's vagina.
Nope.
For at least 10 minutes.
Or one more beer.
But, like, I did have a very difficult time, despite the performances, of just giving a shit about any of these characters.
No. One of them is really redeemable.
I mean, I don't think they were terrible. I didn't care about them. I'm like, okay, well, and toward the end, Donna was sitting next to me. I'm like, oh, she's going to off herself. And then sure enough, there it happened. And I'm like, I don't know.
That was telegraphed.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then when it finally happened, I'm like, I feel nothing.
No.
Not about suicide in general. I'm just talking about, like, in this movie, like, the character's gone. Like, I don't feel any loss. Like, this narrative, the path that they've taken us.
I mean, Kathleen mentioned how, like, they added all these components to the A Star Is Born, and it made us not care. And I think that's whose story is this? It's supposed to be Kelly's story, I think, but Bo is also, like, this big presence in it.
Yeah.
And, like, I think he's supposed to be, like, the good guy, but he's not a good guy. He's, like, he sleeps around with all the ladies and...
I think it was an ensemble. I really do. I think it was not necessarily meant to mean, like, any one person's... Any one person's
story. I don't know. I mean, the description of the movie put out by the studio is that one star, like, a rising star and a falling star, you know, find their way together. So... it's like, well, who's the rising star?
Do that.
Is the rising star supposed to be Chiles, or is the rising star supposed to be Bo? Because I was like, why are there two air quotes rising stars? Like, that doesn't make any sense. Which one are we supposed to be rooting for?
I think that was studio marketing, because I mean, Paltrow is probably the biggest star in there. Tim McGraw obviously has his own fan base. Garrett Hedlund was pretty... it's getting big. I think... what's her shit? The girl who plays Chiles, who was in Gossip Girl.
Leighton Meester.
Yes. She was still in Gossip Girl at the time.
I think it was toward the end of it. And this... she actually can sing as well and is...
yes.
Like a trained singer. And I think this movie was supposed to be a vehicle to kind of launch her...
your film career?
Her film / music career. Because if you remember toward that, like, you know, the end of the aughts, if you will, the early 2000s going into the teens, that was like a kind of popular thing that was happening with young stars. It was like, you're going to be a pop star and a movie star and a TV star all at once, and whichever one of these takes off the most, that's the one we're going to go for.
Crossover success.
So,
but, like, I do believe it was an ensemble. I mean, everybody pretty much got the same amount of screen time. Maybe Gwyneth Paltrow and Tim McGraw got more of it. They kind of fell into their roles, their archetypes, like the sort of the struggling, like, star on the decline, like the young ingenue, and the sort of
the pure artist that's out to just sing to the people. He doesn't.
Yes.
He doesn't need the. He doesn't need the money and the fame.
Yeah.
He just wants to sing to some good guys, man.
Yeah.
That opening scene when they introduce that Garrett Hedlund character, Bo, which is Bo, Jesus.
Yeah.
When they introduce him, like
right.
they show the trucks and the honky tonk that he's singing in, and everybody's the boots and the cowboy hats, and I'm like, okay, so this is the guy who's supposed to establish the country cred. And then they have this polished young starlet who's kind of being groomed as his protege, who's called, what is it, Country Barbie?
Yeah, and she thanks him. She asks him, how do I look? And he says, like Country Barbie. And she's like, oh, thank you. It's like, oh my God, she's so dumb. She can't even understand when she's being insulted.
It's not a compliment.
When that happened, that scene happened, and that exchange happened, I thought, okay, so this is going to be one of those what's real country versus what's crap, and like what's real art versus what's poppy, you know, overproduced nonsense. I'm like, okay, well, it's been a while since I've seen a movie that had that discussion. So I thought, okay, it's going to be that. So whatever, it's going to be cliche. But I was impressed by like each of those characters that I named, like those four different roles, those four different archetypes, they weren't completely without depth, because she was the young girl was supposed to be this young rising star in the music industry, who was also supposed to be like a beauty pageant winner.
Mm-hmm.
But she's also very self-aware. Like she understands how she's perceived, and she tries not to be an ignoramus.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God.
Yeah. Well, because she secretly comes from a violent past with her parents, and she's probably been in and out of foster care and whatever. And I was like, where is that coming from?
Yeah, that came out of nowhere. And by the time we were introduced to that
information, it went nowhere.
Yeah.
It was in the last 10 minutes of the movie. It's like...
Yeah.
Yeah. By that time, like, I already don't care about you.
Yeah. Well, I know... I was talking with Jody, actually, a little bit yesterday when I dropped the beers off. And she was like, and I am tired of these movies where this girl who... Obviously, she can't even perform. She has stage fright, and she has trouble singing in front of a crowd. And all of a sudden, she can just write lyrics to a hit song and like perform in front of a stadium, just kind of like perpetuating that it's so easy to be a musician. It's so easy to just kind of pick this up and run with it. All you gotta do is look good and
mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually had that in my notes, because she goes from, she's crippled with fear singing in that bar in Nashville to what? A week, a day, a month? We have no idea how much time has passed later when she's standing in Houston at what I would guess maybe is like the Astrodome or something equivalent. Not a lick of stage fright whatsoever. She has like a fraction of a second where she looks nervous, and then she just busts right out and sings. And I was like, I'm sorry. That's the biggest bunch of horse shit I've ever seen. She should
stage
be back there throwing up with Kelly.
It's a crippling thing for a performer.
Mm-hmm.
It's horrible. Each individual has to figure out what they're going to do to get over this stage fright. Mm-hmm. And you can't just turn it on and off. No one is that talented, because talent is bullshit. It's all about hard work.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie seemed to like, oh, this gal is naturally talented. No, they're not. No one's naturally talented. If you put the work in, you're going to do it. Now, some people are going to be better than you, and that's just life. And like, you're very pretty and you can carry a tune and we can fix it if you can't, through pop music, pop country music, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
She couldn't play an instrument. She could, she was writing lyrics, whatever. And that's what Jody was getting to. It's like, no one just turns on the ability to write lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
You've been doing that since you were four.
Right.
You've been practicing that time and time again. You don't just say, you're not discovered, and then all of a sudden, oh, I can write lyrics. No, man, that is a hard thing to do. You don't have a God-given talent to write lyrics.
No.
You have had an obsession with words and rhyming and storytelling to the point where you can put them down in a coherent song and convey it to others.
You know, it's interesting you bring that up, because of all of us, you probably have the most experience performing in front of large groups musically, mm-hmm. and you're married to a musician.
I get horrible stage fright.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm like, and like you're married to a musician and who owns a music school who works with musicians, and like I'm married to a vocalist who's performed professionally, and all of them are like, yeah. I mean, the talent is talent. That's fine. That's great. If you have, you're born with some, a modicum of natural ability, but like after that, it's extremely hard work for a long time. And then you're not guaranteed success. Like mm-hmm. there's a lot of people like this, the starlet in this movie, the child's character, she's a perfect example of like, okay, here's somebody with some talent and great looks. The looks are what we're looking for. Everything else we can give her. Mm-hmm. Like we can, you can take mm-hmm. dancing lessons and singing lessons, and we can get you used to being in front of a crowd. We can teach you how to have presence. We can teach you to do all these things. Mm-hmm. We will nurture this in you. But and while there's guys like the Garrett Hedlund character, the Beau, who have like this raw sort of artistic, I don't know, he's the artiste. He's the ones that want mm-hmm. to keep it real, and he's not successful. Like
right.
That's the nature of right. the music industry and the entertainment industry.
Yeah.
So he had all of the presence and none of the resources, and she had all the resources and had to learn the presence. I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of spitballing here.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well done. Well said, Dave.
Yeah.
They were polar opposites. He had the skills and the quote talent. He had been practicing and writing and performing in front of mm-hmm. people, and he owned that stage, mm-hmm. whereas she had none of that, but had the backing, had the money behind her to mm-hmm. push her to the forefront. And there is no way in heck, if she wasn't as pretty as she was, that she would have ever gotten an opportunity to open for whatever Kelly's brand was. Let's say she's Loretta Lynn or the Faith Hill.
Right.
You're not going to open for Faith Hill unless you know somebody.
Right.
And unless that was Faith one Hill. Of the, that one of the things is right. Or sleeping with her husband, but that's just implied.
Yeah.
Or is it, or yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
A weird point in the movie that Kathleen did cover in the you synopsis.
You bring up a very interesting point. It would have been very easy to fall into that trap for the director or the writer, who are the same person actually, to write that character as like sort of sleeping her way to the top, or to write Tim McGraw character as like a hard ass like philanderer mm-hmm. who's all about money, or to write the Garrett Hedlund character as this pure artiste guy who's like uncompromising in what he wants to do. But they didn't fall into that trap, and I appreciated that. I appreciated mm-hmm. that they didn't make that young girl exactly what you were going at, like sleeping with this manager. Mm-hmm. I liked that. I wish it made me like the movie, but it made me hate the movie less.
I'm not entirely sure she didn't.
Well, that's the thing, is that they never entirely address that. She's mm-hmm. so young and naive and inexperienced that you can see her, you know, she would easily fall for the, mm-hmm. you know, if you do this, then I'll get mm-hmm. you what you want, da 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 kind of thing. But she's paired against a character in James, Kelly's husband, that is dealing with his own mess of grief and mm-hmm. confusion and, you know, just kind of panic that his entire life is just completely falling down mm-hmm. around him publicly and privately. And so it's like, you can't tell if it's like, he didn't strike me as being the schmarmy guy who's out to just, he's not JJ the promoter.
Yeah, who, like, you want to be a big star, don't you?
Right. He doesn't seem like that. He almost more seems like he sees in Childs what he a little bit used to see in his wife when they were mm-hmm. younger. She's pretty. She's talented. She could have what it takes to get all the way up to being a Kelly. Right. But at the same time, he's, because of his own mess, very hesitant and maybe doesn't want to push her into it.
Yeah, that I thought that was an interesting dynamic. Go ahead, Pete. Sorry.
He wants to push her into it because he pulled her out of rehab.
No, not Kelly,
early.
Childs. And he's pushing Kelly because I think he's trying to. I don't know why, other than he wanted her not, he wanted her to go out on top and not leave her career ending at that incident in Dallas. He didn't want that to be the last thing that Kelly was known for.
Yeah, it could also be like he just wanted to resume what they were doing before. He wanted normalcy for them.
Right.
Like he wanted to go back to the way they were. But it was pretty obvious by that time, like their relationship was more transactional. Like he was the manager and she was the mm-hmm. product, mm-hmm. The performer. And they weren't really husband and wife anymore.
No.
I can definitely see how he would see that Chiles character, his protege, as the new version of what his wife was. And he sees all the energy and the potential and the talent. But that being said, I'm glad that it didn't overtly make him look like he was trying to seduce her or,
yeah.
But there was definitely a connection that he wanted there.
Before she's used up like Kelly.
Right?
As you're saying, like he sees Kelly in her, like the Kelly when she started off. And I'm like, so she's, you know, so there's kind of a progression to Kelly.
Yeah.
I mean, like,
yeah, but even he says in the movie that he doesn't even understand what happened to Kelly, like how she went from this force of nature who wanted nothing more than to be on that stage and performing to mm-hmm. as fragile as the fucking bird in a box. Why was that a storyline I did not understand? And it's like, dude, your drunk ass wife could not keep take care of herself and her pregnancy. Why do you think she can be trusted with this bird? I don't even like birds. Like, I just did not understand it at all.
I like birds because they're little dinosaurs.
It does make you wonder why they called this movie Country Strong when, like, especially
no one
Kelly
in this movie
is like
strong.
The least strong character that you could possibly put as a lead character.
Yeah. Yeah. No one is strong in this movie. Even weirdo
Bo
with his patchy ass beard that didn't ever fully grow in.
Okay. Thank you.
That was schmarmy and gross. And look. I feel for a person if they can't totally grow, if you can't fully grow in the facial hair, shave. And if you don't want to shave every day, go get laser treatments done to your face and get it taken off. That screams porn star pedophile to me every time. I can't stand it.
Especially when your teeth are so white that it just draws your eye right there. He had the whitest teeth, like they glowed.
Yeah.
You get that white country teeth.
So I can't grow facial hair. I can't grow head hair.
There you go.
So just shave it all
My
off.
My brother can't grow facial hair. So he saved up a bunch of money for several years and then went and had laser treatments done.
Electrolysis.
So that he doesn't have to ever shave. I mean, he looked like some sort of weird science experiment whenever he would try to grow. It's not good.
He looked like mold.
Yeah, it was creepy. But I also, when we finished watching the movie, I looked up the name of the actor that played Bo, and then I immediately got on YouTube to try to find an interview with him speaking, because he has the worst pattern of speech in this film. I felt like he was trying to be Kris Kristofferson from A Star Is Born. Because he had, so I was like, is this guy Australian or British and he's trying to overcompensate? Because I kept waiting for like a block of wood to fall out of his mouth. Like, what was restricting like the muscles in the tongue to actually say the words that he needed to say?
Oh, so he was suffering from like the Vito Corleone disease?
A little bit of that, but it was more like, I'm just not going to bother opening my mouth. So I looked up an interview with him to see, and like, Tris, like, what are you doing? I was like, shut up. I need to hear him talk for a second. And then when he did, I was like, nope, he did that on purpose. That's all him. So I don't know what the hell that was about.
That's always funny when you see that. Like when you see somebody give a really effective performance as far as their speech patterns, and then you listen to them in an interview and they are from another country, or like, oh well, yes, I attended Juilliard for 3 years and I studied the Lee Strasberg school, and oh my god, like, and you played like Pimp Number 3,
right? Right. Yeah. Well, it's like in the newest Star Wars movies, I don't know the actor's name, but the kid that plays Finn, that's like the stormtrooper that
whatever, is British. And I saw him on Graham Norton, and he was on there with the girl that plays Ray, and they were talking about how she got to use her natural accent, but he had to do an American accent. And he said that he didn't go into it wanting to do an American accent, but, you know, like, says, "Stop or I'll shoot." And he says it in his, like, accent. He's like, "It sounds ridiculous. A stormtrooper can't sound like that," you know?
You just made me realize something. In Star Wars, like the original trilogy, A New Hope and Empire and whatnot, all of the Imperial officers speak in a British accent, but all the stormtroopers speak in an American accent.
Well, when you get the promotion, you get the accent.
You receive
the
commission.
Take off the armor, put on the hat, and here's your speech coach.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Yeah. I was also super annoyed that Tim McGraw didn't sing at all during the movie, because
how ironic is that?
I know. Yeah. It's ridiculous. Yeah. Well,
and not his movie.
Honestly, they didn't write the songs that would have made him want to sing. It was the most generic country.
Yes. They were not even remotely catchy at all. Literally, the only song that was catchy in the movie was Friends in Low Places.
Oh, speaking of the songs, that last song that Gwyneth Paltrow sings at the end, Coming Home, which was not the most inspired lyrics, but whatever. It was decent, I guess. It was nominated for an Oscar.
Really?
Yes. That song, Best Original Song, Coming Home, was nominated for an Oscar. It did not win.
Must have been a slow year for
I think the winner
music.
That year was like from Burlesque or something. 2010. I'll look that up.
This last year's Oscar winner, Parasite, was a...
I don't think it won an original song.
No, it did not. You're right, Dave. It did not. But as far as Oscars go, that Parasite? Was a great film. I'd like to talk about that film a lot more than I would like to talk about this film.
We could probably talk about this for a while, but I am very thirsty and I want another beer.
Sounds good. Awesome.
Yes, let's do it.
Who wants an orange whip? Orange whip? Orange whip? Three orange whips.
Take one.
Our second beer of the evening is the Lord Hobo Brewing Company's Boom Sauce. Double IPA that has another secret advantage in that it is a Geary beer.
Oh,
ooh.
It is a 7.8 IPA or ABV and a 78 IBU. So it is exactly that 10 fits. Times.
That tracks.
The IBU is 10 times the ABV, which is what our theory of the Geary translates to.
The Geary theory.
And for our listeners who are not familiar with the Geary, I will explain that later. Please go to our website, and there is a full explanation on the Geary and the relationship between IBUs and ABV, and that's it.
Yes.
So this is a double IPA.
It is a double IPA.
Double IPA, yes.
Kathleen, tell me, what do you think?
She's going to hate the hell out of this.
I don't love it. It has a weird finish flavor.
Mm-hmm.
It's very vegetal. It's very grassy.
I do get that, yeah. This does have a bit of a lingering aftertaste to it.
Yeah, which as a Geary, I shouldn't be tasting mowed grass.
No, I think this is...
is an exception to the rule.
The Geary. Uh-huh. I agree. The hop is very strong, but it's not, maybe it's not strong, it's just prevalent.
It's very forward. Whatever other flavors are in here are masked by the hop flavor, because it has kind of a, it has kind of a fruity aroma when you smell it, but I don't taste any fruit, though. Is there clove? Am I tasting clove in this?
Gosh, I'm not getting clove, but let me take another sip. Hang on.
It really tastes pretty good in the mouth. But then
as opposed to in the eyeball?
We cannot start this whole mouth thing again.
Like, it's got some pillowy mouth feel.
Yes, that.
Wait,
stop.
Kathleen, I need you to say, we can't start this whole in the mouth thing again.
I'm not sure that I want that included in the recording.
Oh, no, the cat's out of the bag now.
Or isolated in a blooper either. Like, it's probably better within the context of the conversation than it is isolated in a blooper.
I wholeheartedly disagree.
maybe both.
Well, I'm reading the description from the Lord Hope Brewing Company, and it says, our flagship IPA, 6 hop varietals, and a late hop addition of Mosaic. What is a late hop addition? Is it a hop that is introduced later in the brewing process?
Yes. So when you introduce hops late, you can do it a number of ways. Mm-hmm. One is called dry hopping, where damn it. after the beer has fermented to its desired ABV, it is either filtered through or a bag of hops is added to the solution, the beer itself. Another way to do it is as you're pulling the beer out of the fermenter or the bright tank or whatever vessel you're doing, you can also run it through a contraption.
A contraption? Is that the industry term?
Yes. Yeah. Where you have dry hops in there and you can just run the beer through all your fresh hops and then it goes directly into the keg or the bottle. Mm. And there's a fourth way to do it where you can push it through something called a randle. And the randle is a cylinder full of fresh hops, and it needs to be changed frequently. And it's literally on the tap system. So when you pull a beer off of the tap system, it's coming from the keg. Shut up. It's coming from the keg through this cylinder that holds these fresh hops and into your glass. So that's another way to get fresh hops into your beer. This one, I'm guessing it's filtered through it, I would imagine, and probably before the actual filtration happens. So after the fermenter, this is my guess, after the fermenter, it's filtered through fresh hops, and those hops go directly into the filtration system, which is usually a sand filtration system with using some sort of a sand medium, and that will get all the hops, the hop flour, the cones, any sort of debris, any sort of yeast, that will filter all of that out, and then it'll go into the bright tank. And from the bright tank, you carbonate it and throw it into kegs and cans. So that might be very confusing to a lot of people. It's a little confusing to me.
Cool.
There.
I heard a lot about sand and cylinders and randles and bags.
I may have shared too much. I apologize. I've had a few drinks. I may have shared a little too much. My apologies.
So you sand filter probably the grundle, and then you bass-fries right. The foam hop, and then you hot bag it.
Right.
So anybody else, when they saw this can and knew what we were drinking, did they want to yell, like, all right, you primitive screwheads, this is my boob sauce?
Yes, I did.
Because I did.
Who doesn't want to yell boom sauce?
How did I not do that when we introduced the stupid beer in the first place? I was disappointed
this is
myself.
My boom sauce. Right. It's a good beer. I like it. I don't know if I would order it.
Like, I can think of some instances, one specifically, where one would yell boom sauce.
Ew.
Yeah. Paint me a picture, Dave.
No.
I was trying to get an ew out of Kathleen.
Ew. No. Do not.
Kathleen doesn't
want to continue this conversation.
Boom sauce!
And boom sauce goes the dynamite.
It's poison gross, Mitchie. I know.
It's true. Brewed in a ball can. Can is made by the Ball Company and Ball State.
What?
The guy that said and boom goes the dynamite was from the Ball State. He was trying out for the Ball State sports
mascot
team. Yeah, there's like...
Sports team.
sports
team. This is a great story, Troy.
Well, it's my alma mater. Good job, Troy. It's my alma mater. So I've always been proud that came from Ball State. And boom goes the dynamite.
Blam.
I think we're going a little off the rails here, but I'm okay with
that. Yeah, well.
Because I don't want to talk about this fucking movie anymore.
Hey, let's talk about...
I was going to say, I don't know what else there is to say.
There isn't anything to say.
Well, I mean,
you know,
except this movie was stupid.
It does bear mentioning that after the movie was over, I looked over at Donna and I more or less threw the remote at her. I'm like, here, I just need to see something with an explosion in it. And she's like, okay. And then she turned on an action movie. I'm like, oh, thank you, honey. Well,
I feel like this movie is an example of what a Hallmark movie could be with a real budget.
You know, oh,
wow.
God, that's really good.
That's well said.
Hallmark movies were...
If Hallmark movie could be budget. Dark and edgy, because a Hallmark movie is mm-hmm. not going to have mm-mm. a drunk...
We've established that.
Yeah, they're not going to have...
suicide.
Addiction issues, a suicide, affairs, mm-hmm. you know, none of that mm-hmm. stuff is going to happen.
Multiple
so this is
affairs.
Like this is like right. Hallmark After Dark. That's what this movie is.
Hallmark After Dark.
Oh, you know what? That is a Twitter handle waiting to happen.
I agree.
Hallmark After Dark. I got to do this. Has to happen. I'm writing this shit down. The movie did make money. I think the budget was $15 million. It made $20 million box office, not including whatever else afterwards. So the movie's doing okay, and it had a built-in audience with Tim McGraw,
yes.
the country fans, and the Gwyneth Paltrow fans.
There are none of those.
I don't share your hatred for her, but I understand it. The Nashville fans, because I mean, it was some of it was filmed in Nashville, I'm sure, or at least was set in Nashville.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, Nashville is the epicenter of all things country music.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, karaoke in Nashville is no joke. Like,
yep.
people who perform karaoke in Nashville are not messing around. Like,
not
they are
screwing around.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. And you can't even get in. Like, you can't go to a bar that has a karaoke night with a group of your friends and hope to get on the schedule. The schedule's already set.
Wow.
So
so it's an open mic night versus a karaoke night.
Pretty much, yeah. Because everybody's hoping to get discovered.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah. I believe that.
As much of a hotbed of opportunity as Nashville is as far as the country music scene, like, you just kind of have to assume that all eyes are on you.
Mm-hmm.
No matter where you go, any public place, like you could get discovered
you,
anywhere.
You assume and hope,
right?
Yeah, it's like somebody wants to be the next new star, like the next new Chiles Stanton.
Yes. Ugh.
Ugh.
What the fuck, Chiles Stanton? And the other guy's name was Bo Hunton. Like, really?
Bo.
His name is Bo
Hunton.
Yeah. Stupid.
I had a fit about that. Bo, really? Your name is Bo Hunting.
Yeah.
Fuck off.
And why is it that the bad boy of any type of movie like this that's set in a country scenario cannot own a pickup truck that was made after 1975? What is that? I don't understand that. And they're all powder blue. They're all powder blue. Like, do
it's
they go to
that.
The, like, I'm a badass country fella, got a heart of gold, paint shop, get my truck painted powder blue.
All right, Kathleen, how much do you know about trucks?
Very little.
Okay, he fully drives, from what I can tell, a 1975 Ford Ranger. That's one of the first things I noticed. But yeah, that was astute. Like, when you said that, I'm like, oh.
Yeah, so Dave hates him because Dave's all about Chevy.
That's right.
Any more? Okay. I'm going to pose this question to all of you. Can we just consider cowboy hats and boots a fucking costume now? Nobody needs this. Like, you look, dresses up as in a cowboy hat and boots. I mean, is this a lifestyle? Yes, there is a sarcastic tone to my question, mm-hmm. but who really wears this stuff anymore? Like, you don't see people walking around in, like, a Viking outfit. You know, it's essentially the same thing.
The hat keeps
lifestyle.
The sun out of your eyes. I mean, like...
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you that. In a city like Nashville, 100%, it is a costume. If you're actually working on a ranch somewhere, mm-hmm. I can understand a more subdued version of the hat because it mm-hmm. it does shade the eyes and shade the neck when you're mm-hmm. out working in the sun or whatever, so I can understand that. But, you
know. Besides, clothes in general are basically you declaring your style, beliefs.
Your fandom.
You know, yeah, your fandom. Like, do I need to wear nothing but, you know, graphic tees every day of my life?
No, you do not.
I feel but like there's a conversation about this between the two of you at some point.
Yeah.
I actually don't care.
But I think if you're in New York City and you're dressed as a cowboy, you're just a gigolo.
Right.
Everywhere
you
go.
A dancing cowboy.
No, if you've seen Midnight Cowboy, mm-hmm. you know, just strut around like you're John Voight and hey.
Right.
Or the Naked Cowboy.
We're trying to make ourselves a living here.
Yeah. I was going to say, or the Naked Cowboy down in Times Square. Yeah.
Oh, that works. Yeah. That works too.
I'll give it that. Like, I'm sure that there are people who legitimately wear cowboy boots and hats and the giant belt buckles, and that's just the style of the region.
There's reason for the boots and the hat. The buckle is a little silly.
Right. Okay, like the boots, yes. Riding, it makes sense. The hat, sure, I could see the utility of it. Mm-hmm. But what inspired this question is during the scene when Gwyneth Paltrow goes to that Make-A-Wish Foundation kid and the mm-hmm. kid is wearing the hat, they were followed with musicians to play accompaniment for her.
Right.
And the mandolin player was a guy in just a flannel shirt and a ball cap. And he looked as country as could be. Like, I used to work on a farm, believe it or not. And I saw way more ball caps practically mm-hmm. worn than I did cowboy hats. And
yes.
Oh, sure. Ball caps are cheaper than cowboy hats.
I was just going to say that. One of my friends, when I was in college, she did competitive horse showing. I don't, mm-hmm. I'm using all the right words in the wrong orders with that, but you know, she showed horses competitively. And so there was a uniform, if you will, to what mm-hmm. she had to wear, including a cowboy hat. And mm-hmm. some of those hats that she had for those were hundreds of dollars.
Yeah. Like it cost like $500 for a good cowboy hat.
So I'm not wearing a hat that's $200 while I'm baling hay. I'm going to wear a $5 baseball hat instead. So
the baseball cat,
I totally understand
hat that was
that.
Given to you by the tractor supply company down the street
for free
when you bought
exactly.
it.
The John Deere company gave you. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was a question to ask, specifically given, like, I seriously doubt that people in Nashville are wrangling cows.
I don't think in city proper, no.
Yeah, okay, you get that, but then where are the suede jackets with the fringe? Like, that was a thing at a time.
It'll come back.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it's all cyclical.
But, no, I mean, I get it. Like, I can call it a costume or uniform all I want, but it is a lifestyle. Like, everything uh-huh. we wear is a reflection of who we want to be, so
I
can't really get mad about it.
Right.
For I think the first 6 or 7 or 8 years of my life, I wore sneakers and cowboy boots.
Sneakers and cowboy boots?
Well, not simultaneously.
At the same time? That would be very uncomfortable.
One on one foot, one on one the other.
I wore the sneakers on my hands. I just walked around like an animal. it's funny to think about, like, okay, I was born in South Carolina. I wore cowboy boots. I grew up listening to country music. I worked on a farm. I drove truck for a feed and supply store. Like, if you were to not know that I was Asian, I just sound like a down-home country boy. Like, go camping, and I know how to shoot guns. I own a gun and all that stuff. And, like, you wouldn't think, like, oh, yeah, he's the son of Vietnamese immigrants.
Right. Right.
But here I am. So, do I like country music? Yeah, I like old country music. Like, this pop country, this music that you listen to nowadays without substance, the overproduced nonsense. No, none of that speaks to me.
Yeah, but like Waylon Jennings fans would have said that about Kenny Rogers in the 70s, I'll bet.
Possibly, yeah.
And now we're like,
no, there's a very big difference. I see what you're saying when you think of like June Carter Cash versus Faith Hill kind of thing. There's a progression where the music evolves with the taste of people, but there is also a very definitive line between country and pop country.
Yeah.
There's country music.
And then there's Garth Brooks when he showed up, right?
No, there's Garth Brooks.
I like
and then
Garth
there's
Brooks on
Taylor
songs.
Swift. Taylor Swift
Ooh, yeah.
is pop country. Big time
pop
country. And the poppier
pop.
She got, the more she just walked away from country completely. Yep. But her roots were definitely like
early country.
Yeah. But she writes her own music and plays her own songs.
She right. does.
I'm not going to poo-poo anybody who sings songs that they don't write.
But yeah, I like country. And the music in this was so kind of like middle of the road, bland country. Like, there's no song in there. I couldn't tell you one of the songs. I'm curious if like the album, like on repeat listens would work or something.
It's bland like and boring, all of it. There's no anything to any of those songs.
They were all fine. You know, like there was no good song. They were like, okay, this is an actual song and they're actually singing and there's a song and a melody. But like, I couldn't pick out any of the songs later.
So no standouts.
Yeah, I guess so. Mm-hmm. I don't.
There weren't any Disney sing-alongs.
No, the catchiest song in the whole movie is fucking Friends in Low Places, which doesn't even have any part of the storyline necessarily.
As soon as that song started up, I'm like, God damn it, this is going to be stuck in my head for 3 days now.
I blame it all on your roots.
So yeah, I'm also going to have to come up with a soundtrack to How to Murder the Dog. Mitchell! I literally have to go pick his ass up.
All right, let's let Kathleen pick the dog's ass up, which I hope we get a video of that. So we've said our piece about this movie, and we all have our opinions. Let's rate it. Dave, tell us how to rate the film.
You don't tell me what to do. So we here at Good Beer, Bad Movie Night have a rather unique rating system. We have the six-pack rating, where we rate a movie from 0 beers to 6 beers. If you rate a movie 0 beers, you need no alcohol to enjoy the movie. You like it as is. A rating of 6 beers, however, means that you have to be completely inebriated in order to tolerate the movie. So, and it does bear mentioning that this is not a measure of the quality of the movie. It's a measure of how much you enjoyed it and how much beer you need to enjoy it. So, let's start with Pete.
Oh, shit.
Yes. Oh, shit, indeed. How many beers do you require to enjoy this movie?
6 is too low to enjoy this movie.
Oh my goodness. It is from 0 to 6. This is worse than The Swarm.
I would rather watch The Swarm again. Ooh. Because I can make fun of The Swarm.
What?
I can't make fun of this movie because it deals with spousal abuse, drug and alcohol abuse, loss of a child, and suicide. I can't make fun of this movie.
You know what? Okay. So, that's fair. That is fair.
This movie, to enjoy this movie, I need 6 beers.
Okay.
Okay. Fair
Understandable.
Enough.
Troy, how many beers do you require to enjoy this movie?
I honestly, I think I need 3. It was
what?
Fine. Ooh. It wasn't. I didn't hate this movie. I was. It was a little bland, but I wasn't bored necessarily. I was just kind of like, I don't. it was kind of poorly executed. I saw that it could have been a good movie in there, but like, meh. 3.
All right. So you saw the potential, but it didn't pan out.
It didn't live up to it.
Okay. Next we'll do Dave. Me. I'm Dave.
we're saving Kathleen. I see this.
Yes. Okay, I required 4 beers. I appreciated what could have been really cliche characters. They weren't as cliche as I thought they were going to be. I have to grant that this movie is not a movie that I would have watched normally under normal circumstances. I feel like I watched this one under duress. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't find myself hating it. So 4 beers for me. Let me mark myself down for 4. Last but not least, Kathleen, the founder of the feast. How many beers do you require to watch Gwyneth Paltrow for 2 hours?
Ugh. To be totally honest, even though I hate her and she totally sucks and this is 4 beers for me too. This movie is bland, vanilla, white bread that's been left out on the counter and molded because it has like dark topics that it covers, but in the most bland, we do not give a shit about these characters at all. Like, I've seen every version of A Star is Born. Like, I know what's going to happen, and I am sobbing at the end of the movie. This is a ripoff of that story. Didn't give a shit. Didn't give a shit. The two moments that elicited any kind of reaction out of me in this movie were I laughed when she said thank you to the country Barbie comment, and I was offended for the character of Kelly when she was delivered that terrible baby doll package at the Houston show, because that's just not okay for anybody. Other than that, I didn't give a shit about anything that happened in this movie.
Okay, so 6 for Pete, 3 for Troy, 4 for Dave, 4 for Kathleen. This is a crap movie.
Yeah.
This was terrible.
Yeah, yeah. Well, much like many of the films we watch.
No, I think this was an exceptionally terrible film.
No, well, you know what, Pete, to be fair, I think in this case, all of us dislike this movie as much as Kathleen always dislikes the movies.
That's fair.
To a certain extent, yes. I still don't feel like I've had my vindication of a movie that I enjoy that you guys all hate, but it's out there and I will find it. But I will say, in retrospect, had I known that this movie was as dark as it was, I wouldn't have picked it.
I've been asked to screen my movies before.
Don't stop that.
Yeah.
Right. And
wait, did you just say don't or don't stop that?
No, it's not anyway. Don't, comma, stop that. It is.
Hold on. Before we move on to that, Kathleen, how can our listener, actually, it's official. We have listeners.
That's true.
Please tell them and anyone else who might be inclined how they can get a hold of us.
They can get us on the Facebooks, which is where I would say we're probably the most active. You can send us a message through Facebook, or you can post right on the page, comment on the different posts, etc. You can email us at gbbmnpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us at Twitter using that same complicated set of letters, gbbmn. And I think I just said an extra N podcast. Or you can find us on Insta at Good Beer Bad Movie Night, all written out, all one word. So we're there. Send us a message. Send us a movie suggestion. Tell us how much you hate Gwyneth Paltrow as well. I would appreciate that for sure.
So in July, we usually do an independent filmmaker. We've done Josh Gordon in the past and Christopher Mim in the past, and we've enjoyed their films. So I have something a little special worked up for it. It's kind of a grab bag of films. So we'll let you know. we'll let you know exactly what's going on once we solidify what we are actually watching, and we've got two, maybe three things that we're watching. Oh my goodness, we are watching
the watching.
Right, the watching.
Directed by M. Night Shyamalan.
So anyway, we are going to do the watching on these films. That's what's happening. So until next time,
that's how it's done, sweetheart.
But truthfully, I mean, I think at some point in our lives, every one of us has thought about holding a stone in our vaginas. I mean,
as the only actual owner of one of those in this podcast, I can 100% tell you that that has never, ever crossed my mind.
Don't take this away from me, Kathleen. I don't know if it's true, but the reason I even looked it up at all is with...
Sorry. I knocked my computer over.
Mother fuck my fuckity fuck.
I'm an Asian guy, but like I was born in South Carolina. Yeah. I'm sorry to spring that on you.
What?
Okay, so a couple of labia liberties.
That sounds like something they sell on Goop.
A labia liberty.
I hate Gwyneth Paltrow, by the way.
Mucus plug. Okay, no, now I'm done. Okay.
Ew.
I think it's time to let's rate this movie and get go home. We're all home. Okay. And I have three, count them, three special shorts, I suppose. We have a featurette.
You have special shorts, Pete?
And I do. I absolutely do.
Ew. Are you Mormon?
Rubber?
My shorts are very special.
But she's selling vagina candles.
Vagina candles?
Yeah. She.
Do you light them first?
How the hell should I know? I'm not going to get a vagina candle.
And we can just follow along. Oh, my God. I'm so drunk. let's, I can try that again.